Thank you very much, everyone. It's really great to be in Cork, and it's fabulous to be here in a venue that's been going on since 2007 and has, I think, 50 poetry readings a year, which is incredible. So thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you, Paul, and thank you, Sue, for that introduction. I'm going to start reading straight away with a poem called A Gift, because to me it's a gift to be here. And it's a poem that's also about summer, which hopefully, maybe by reading this poem, summer will come. A Gift. The swallows return. I watch their flight. They pair and repair. Wing fork silhouettes, a pattern of spring and summer, a memory in winter. Once I stood on a beach in Africa, watched the surf, wild crash of waves, roar and rush of it. I felt the touch of a wingtip, gentle as a whisper, swallows swooped past. Now they circle our house, the sky-filled flash of wings, swallow, dive and dip, curve and weave, plunge and chatter. I remember the caress, ethereal delight, gift of dawn and dusk, eternal dance of dark and light. A lot of my poems are about animals, swallows, nature, all that sort of thing. And the next poem is a poem that I get really angry, so I'm going to read this poem, and then I'm going to read what I call my angry poems. This is a poem called The Elephant Song, and it's I'm always amazed at what human beings can do to animals, and how they can go on hunting and doing all that sort of thing today when, anyway, so the poem will explain itself. And it's called The Elephant Song. I mourn, I cry, I love, I hate. I live as long as you. What right have you to cull my tribe and leave the world for you? You who destroy without thought, you who kill without remorse. What can I leave? It's almost gone. You wear my tusks, you take my song, you sift through time and blot out. Remember, you are not God yet. I bury my dead. I mourn their loss with sensitive trunks and tusks, tracing their lives on the skull's maps. We feel the pain and anguish of traps. What greed takes our trust? Gaping holes, ornamental wealth for show. I eat the grass, sometimes alone. Nature's plenty, renewable, blown back on the winds of time. I don't wear your teeth or hair about my neck, yet I care for my sons and daughters too. You put us on show, make us dance your song, we who have our own. In integrity, with dignity, in joy and hope, I sing of the savage and the wild, wild world. Leave us alone, put yourselves out. Let us be free of civilization's fear and doubt. Let me feel the folds of the earth, the dust of time, the swirl of dirt, the drought, the flood, time's confusion, the sunshine, the water, life's illusion. So imagine one morning, suddenly no trace is found of friend or foe. You are the last remaining one of your race. Your species gone, wiped out, extinct, lost forever, no familiar face, ever. No, you cry, but we cannot. Now with one wild flap of grey, with high-pitched sound and low rumble, we grieve. Okay, so I'll lighten it up a bit. This is a poem called Elizabeth Bishop's Other Fish. And Elizabeth Bishop, you know, the poet, really wonderful American poet, wrote a fantastic poem called The Fish, where she catches a tremendous fish. And by the end of the poem, she's explained that she lets the fish go. So this is about a different type of fish. Elizabeth Bishop's Other Fish. I would have been a good fish, but a dead one. I would have been a prize, caught on a Watson's fancy, played only a little, but enough for a story. I would not have been tremendous and certainly not let go into the rainbow of life's second chances. I would have lain somewhat proudly, cold eyes staring with one hook only, no beard of victories. Perhaps for an out-of-season time, I would have swum alone, surviving, ignored by the world. But on the fisherwoman's first day, I would have risen, easily lured by the fly's glint, hooked on the first cast, delighted over a silver award and much photographed, a trophy to be taken home, but dead. Okay, so I'll read one more angry poem. Okay, this is a poem that was inspired by being at a workshop years and years ago where I was sitting beside a man who said, we started talking about bullfights, and he said, oh, I love all the buzz. I love that buzz of the bullfight. It's fantastic. So I went home and I wrote 10 pages of anger. And then I made this, and then I just, you know, honed it down to get this poem. So I'm not keen on bullfights. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Bull. I was glad to die at 2, glad to give the matador his day, glad the picadors and bandoliers had the right amount of dance and display. I was glad the red cloak waved about, glad that there were cheers and shouts, glad to die in glory and renown, glad to be the god they'd hunted down. Glad the tourist understood our culture, glad they didn't see the matador as butcher, glad the layers of legend remain intact, glad the lacerations on my back release the holy blood and whoops of joy. Glad in such short time you could all enjoy the red spectacle of ancient time. Glad to be the bull sublime, the next in line, the one dying. I was glad to die at 2 in all that buzz and glory. Glad that you lived on to tell my story. So now tell all your friends, bring them along, and let the massacre of bulls live on and on and on. Okay. Now, I'm at an age when all my children are actually grown up, but this is a poem for my daughter who, when she was learning to swim, never ever did as she was told. So we would go to the seal club swimming and she was told she had to stay above water, but she never did. So the teacher spent the whole time leaning into the pool saying, Jessica, come up, and she would come up for a second and then disappear. So this is all the times I watched her swim. Watching you swim, for Jessica. The same, each day the same. The pool still only for a moment, then the plunge and activity. The commands lost in the splash, the water translucent. Red, blue, black and white caps, bobbing, ducking, diving. Excitement masked by coloured plastic. Goggle-eyed, the children stare at yellow-clothed teachers, all seals swimming for home. If only each week were as easy, each plunge a surge forward, each day really the same, not changing. A competition, a lesson, a quest. I watch as you grow, pushing past the babies, no longer little, a new life set out. And as you smile, you proclaim you, your father, your aunt, your granny, your child waits, a seal cub, positioned, poised, next in line, in life's long relay, goggle-eyed, I stare. Okay, this is a poem that was, as I say, my children are all grown up, I suppose I could say, and left home, and we had some horses when they were young, some ponies when they were younger, and then we got this phone call to say that one of the ponies we had since he was 3 and since my daughter was 10, my eldest daughter, was for sale again. And we had, you know, been given first refusal, so it's not a good idea to buy things back, believe me, but especially when your children are gone, because it means you're left to look after them. However, we did. So this is called Copper Fastened. A phone call and you are for sale. Outgrown again, too small, our first refusal called up. And so we bought you back, as if by that one act we could unpick the present, pause the future, relive the past. Defiant like Gatsby, I hold that great capacity for hope. And the past returns unchanged. You, a girl on your back, and laughter. Here in the present, I repeat the past, hold it, another living image. the rose not grotesque, the dreams not faded. I sit in a boat in Connemara, watch the same mountains, faded, threadbare like old carpets, but never more so. It could be any year, I could be any age, only the mirror reflects otherwise. And now your faltering hooves across the field, the future too much in sight. Okay, so the collection that I'm reading from is called A Butterfly's Wing, and I'll read the title poem at the very end, but I developed a kind of obsession with butterflies, which when I read the title poem you'll understand why, but so I'm kind of working backwards. But my eldest daughter went to university in Wales, and she had lived at home until she left to go to university, so it was quite a wrench, as some people will understand. Anyway, so I took her over to Wales, and we spent a long time together, it was great, and then on the last day she said, we didn't know what to do, because I knew she was going to stay in Wales and I was going to come home, so we said, we'll go to the butterfly farm, and I'd never been to a butterfly farm before, and so I wrote this poem, which is partially true. And the butterfly farm is called The Magic House of Life, which I think is an amazing title. The Magic House of Life. In the magic house of life, butterflies lift, flitting delicately, silently, filling the air, soundlessly decorating the tropical trees. Blue and brown, plain and ornate, they live in unhurried splendor for only a short time. Yet in that short time, in that minuscule life, they enrich the air, dazzle the eye. We watch, you and I, as a butterfly is born, gently easing its way out of the pupa, one stage to another, moving to hang for hours, to let the new-made wings harden for flight, harden for life. We watch, you and I, while a tiger lands on your top, resting, startling brown and orange against the white. You can't feel its weightlessness, yet I notice its every move. You, who are moving on, stretching out your wings, hardening for flight, hardening for life. Laughing at my attempts to entice a butterfly to land on me, you gently lift one from the branch and place it on my finger. It's heavier than I thought, this world's weight, this mother's task, this weight, all weight landing on my hand. I hold it for just a moment before it flies effortlessly away. Suddenly the world outside brightens, and we watch, you and I, as all the butterflies fill the air above the trees. We watched, mesmerized by the blue morpho, the lavish exoticism of the Malay lacewing. We watched the king page spread his wings above the common rose. We see that in the bright air, the cloudless sulphur is as majestic as the monarch and as fragile as the white tree nymph fluttering and dancing in the sun's beams. Only the baby is still, poised, preparing for flight, patient. Its pupa now the discarded puppet whose gold warded off the poisonous predators. We stand a long time while the wing beats soundlessly, a silent show, and we watch quiescent. It is only as we turn to leave we see the dying postman, its whole being slowly closing down. Later, you and I say goodbye, each turning, neither looking back. So that's kind of one letting go. And then I wrote another poem called Letting Go. In fact, I wrote, the annoyance of Jessica, though I've read one for her, I wrote Letting Go 1 and Letting Go 2, and I haven't written Letting Go 3 yet, but she keeps asking. So this is for Scott. Letting Go 1. Though I let you go, one by one into the light, though I stood in airports as barriers lifted and planes took flight, I wait your call. And you called from those exotic places, far-flung lands whose names enchant. I relish the new sounds, the Thai, the East, Chulabhorn, Koh Chang and Satun spoken in your new intonation, and I have a whole new language to learn. I listen to the first note of your song for its major key, its melodic message from 7 hours ahead to 7 hours behind. You sleep in my day and walk in my night, but sometimes your familiar voice fills my walk, reaching across the world, coming from there to here to now, only a fingertip away. But some days the magpie's sight brings a double pause, that song notes flattened to its minor key. I catch the echoed sounds, hear the homesickness, push useless buttons, fingers faltering. Then in the empty kitchen's quiet hum, I write in blue ink on white paper, words falling in long, flowing lines. I wrap plum pudding in tin foil, seal it and send it, a 16 euro packet of love. Okay, I'll read one more Empty Nest. This is called Empty Nest, so I'll just round it off with the Empty Nest one. Empty Nests. We are where we are, on this day, in this place, at this time. Though we are alone again, like the stables when the swallow's last chatter echoes in the walls. And though we rattle like the wind through leafless trees, and the peck peck of birds at the feeder echoes in the winter sky. And though the house sounds dulled, beds made in tidy rooms, gaps unfilled, clutter-free, and silence echoes in the walls. And though we stare at emptiness, dirty, rooted in the past, knowing the ones who leave don't cry, only the silence left produces tears, leaves echoes. We remember the swallow's flight, how they lined the wires, boarding cards ready, swoop and weave higher and higher, flash of forked tails echoes in the autumn sky. And the squirrel gathers nuts, and the beech tree holds a single leaf, and a robin forages for worms, and a rainbow startles in the blue-black sky, and we plant snowdrop and crocus bulbs, and our digging and chatter echoes in winter. And I am the girl on the swing, smiling as the blue sky turns, hair swept back, squinting through the sun, and my mother's face is at the window, looking out and laughing, and you are still here. One of the things I do as badly, as well as writing poetry, is I play the piano. I'm a permanent piano student. So being a concert pianist is definitely off my list. However, the Swedish poet Thomas Tranströmer, who sadly died this year, was an amazing inspiration because he had suffered a stroke and couldn't speak and couldn't move his right hand, so but he played the piano. He wrote poetry, obviously, and won the Nobel Prize. But he played the piano, and composers composed music for him to play with one hand, and it was incredible. And I wrote a poem, this is a poem for Thomas Tranströmer. It's in response to his poem, which is called Allegro. And his poem opens, "After a black day, I play Haydn." Now, I was going to start the poem saying, "After a black day, I play Schumann, Haydn's too hard," but I took that bit out, but Haydn is too hard. So, this is called Allegro for Thomas Tranströmer. After a black day, I play Schumann. My hands play from memory, press out a pattern, each depression a lift, each note holds the black day away. I am filled with light, the song resounding through my empty house, the Kindersinn calling back those voices which never allowed for silence. I am contented, safe in Schumann's songs of foreign lands and people, dreaming, cradled in childhood, in warmth by the fireside, and no one goes hungry or dies in pain. Schumann listens, perhaps, maddened perhaps, by my black day's initial attitude. I too ignore the metronome, feel a little madness, as I lift my hands and let them fall. Okay, I'm going to read two new poems. One because we're in a pub. So this one is called Time's Gift. And my daughter, I rang my daughter in London to run a poem by her. She was ready in bed, she was far too late to ring her. And I said, could I just read the poem? Oh, I'm so. So anyway, I read the poem, but she said I should tell everybody that although this poem uses Jack Daniels, you could substitute vodka or wine.
Okay. Or all three.
Yeah, or all three. Or shots. Shots. She's good on shots. She likes shots. Time's gift. Jack Daniels never mends a broken heart. That when you add a Coke, it's worth a try. I watch you move to silence, drift apart. You are never ever one to cry. We've all been down that path, that stony road, and swirled the amber liquid in the glass, and felt the weight of all that heavy load, and sighed and wished that we had let love pass. The days that seem so black will turn to grey, and shards of light will pierce through all the gloom, just as the clock's turn stretches out the day. Through ice and frost, the snowdrops always bloom. Liquid amber only ever eases pain, till time moves forward and we start again. Okay, how am I doing?
Fine.
All right, the other new poem is about clearing out covers and things. It doesn't need any explanation, I don't think. Still, clearing out a cupboard, I find you. Wings closed tight, dusty, dirty looking, moth-eaten. The pun lost in the silence. I lift you out and lie you, flat and still, resting lightly in the palm of my hand. At first I think of death, winter's trophy, caught but forgotten, cold pressed and still. Then I remember hibernation, death's sleep, death's counterfeit, all that. I move you to the windowsill sun, and some strength sends you upright. You pause, wait, wings still closed, till glimpse of orange petticoat, tiny trembles of antennae, shivers sending signals of life as the sun unshutters your wings. And teased by air, they open and closed, and you are gone. Flash of orange and black, unfolding in the blue sky. Later, I walk in the spring sun, step lighter over new green grass. One or two yellow daffodils open, snowdrops bunch around the tree's base. And as lambs call, I open my coat, winter closing behind me. Okay, I'm going to finish with two poems. Suzanne's included the whole family, except my husband is sitting over there in the corner. I'm not going to bring him for him. Okay, so I'm reading the two. I'll finish with two poems. One is for my father. My father and mother died actually 11 months apart, which is why I want to read the two poems together. And which is interesting about this book. When the book came out, I discovered that my father's poem was printed on page 20, which is my mother's birthday, and my mother's poem was printed on page 13, which is my father's birthday. No, 13. Anyway, my father had this really annoying habit. I don't know whether any of you, when you lend someone a book, I like to lend people books. Well, I've actually gone over, but if someone borrows a book, I like to share the book. But my father had this habit of bending the book back, and it looked all battered by the time he got it back. So I did lend him. This is about one of the books he had. April for Dad. I have finished the book you were reading. I have to explain, sorry, this is a book that I discovered beside his bedside after he died. So, and it was called The Pilot's Wife by Anita Shreve, just the truth. I have finished the book you were reading. I have it here with me still, beside my bed, a link. I read on, my thumb, so like your thumb, was steady. No shaking blurred the words as I turned the pages to the still end. You always gripped a book, not held it. Your hands pressed the page, bending it back. Then later you gripped so hard it hurt, terror of falling, the slow, pained walk. But I read the words slowly, creeping to the end, gently turning each page, no pressure. The pressure within, your task incomplete. What drove me to thumb through this book? It lay on your bedside table, face down, its spine cracking, its pages bent. You lay suspended between the beginning and the end. Perhaps because of the heat of that day, in the sweat of that afternoon, in the rarity of that April swelter, I saw you move too swiftly to a close, burnt out, Your life lived giving, now given, and I remained powerless to call you back, unable to relight that ember. So I finished the book you were reading, and I loved it. Okay, so the title poem of the collection, which is on page 13, is called A Butterfly's Wing, and this is, it's not meant to be morbid. See, this poem doesn't sound very morbid. It's not meant to be morbid, because this is, I think, a beautiful thing that happened. And I won't explain too much, but this, the whole thing happened at my mother's funeral, and which gave me a kind of an obsession with butterflies, which I've had ever since. So it's called A Butterfly's Wing. For Mum. Now I linger, looking longingly at every winged being, knowing the impossibility of a hug, knowing the fragility of love, knowing the swiftness of life's flight. Now, never thinking of you in the earth, I see you everywhere. You who did not lie down willingly, but who life took in a sudden stroke. I who could only stroke your hand and watch appalled as you slipped the noose of life and left me numb. You were silent and elusive, transient as the butterfly which appeared at your funeral. It rose delicately out of the lilies which adorned your coffin, allowing me the poise and sustenance of sudden beauty to read for your departure. Now I linger, looking longingly at the painted lady which touches the petals of the rose, and realize that in the fragility of a butterfly's wing, there is strength enough to fly. Thank you very much.